This is the Voice Overwork podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at introduction. It goes without saying that human beings are social creatures. We thrive on social interaction with our family, friends, neighbors, co-workers, and any number of other individuals we interact with throughout the day. The social activities we engage in are what causes our brain to map out the biological reasons, as well as the social and behavioral process of social neuroscience. This concept relies on biological reasons to develop theories on the social process, followed by neuroscience capturing the social aspects of behavior to refine and inform those theories. It's important to note that social neuroscience is not a concept reserved exclusively for humans, as animals that live in packs or groups share these behaviors as well. Consider the structure, interaction, and behavior of a wolf pack. Wolves have a deliberate hierarchy with both an alpha male and alpha female. Only the two alpha wolves are permitted to breed and have pups in the wolf pack structure. Then there's the beta wolf, which is only subordinate to the alpha wolf. Beta wolves are set to take over the job of alpha when the current alpha dies, and all of the remaining wolves in the pack are subordinate to both the alpha male and beta male. The last remaining member of the pack's social structure is arguably one of the most important, the omega. Omega wolves are the weakest wolves in the pack and completely subordinate to all pack members. Omega wolves feed last, or not at all if the alpha does not permit it. But pack members also engage in fights and intimidation to reduce stresses within the hierarchy of the wolf pack. The role of the omega is so significant within the social structure. Chapter 1. A little brain anatomy. Phineas P. Gage was an American railroad worker who had the distinction of an iron railway bolt being driven straight through his head after an explosion, destroying much of his brain's frontal lobe. Due to the damage to a significant part of Gage's brain, the iron rod buried deep inside his skull effectively altered his personality and behavior. Gage's friends often commented, both of these aspects of Gage's life were so different after the accident. He was no longer Gage. Gage's accident took place in September 1848, and he only lived another 12 years after the accident occurred. However, Gage's experience of being impaled in the head by the iron rod inadvertently increased human understanding. It told us that brain cells have the ability to affect someone's personality, and damage to specific areas of the brain may lead to undesirable mental changes. Phineas Gage is such a shining example of how we humans rely on our brains to carry us through the simplest activities of everyday life. Gage's accident and subsequent mental changes are what led to him having roles in such areas as phrenology, psychology, and neuroscience. Coincidentally, similar to the example of Gage's injury, the one and only time I've ever been selected as a juror in a criminal case involved the victim, a man in his 50s, attempting to break up a fight in the parking lot of a bar at closing. As the bar closed and the patrons emptied into the parking lot, two patrons, who were known to dislike one another, began to engage in the early stages of a physical altercation. The two men were loud, attempting to provoke the other, intoxicated, and clearly on a collision course to a fight. Chapter 2. Social Psychology. Social psychology is the study of how people's thoughts, feelings, and behavior are affected by the influence of others. Interestingly, it is important to note that a person does not have to actually have to be in the presence of another person and can be completely alone for this influence to take place. For example, when I was in high school, the movie Clueless was released, starring Alicia Silverstone. The movie is a coming-of-age story about a wealthy high school girl living in Beverly Hills, California. The main character's persona is that of a stereotypical valley girl, and she speaks and uses phrases one would associate with that persona.
After the release of the movie, many of the girls in my high school adopted the Valley Girl persona, and it became common to hear phrases from the movie like, as if, oh my God, I'm totally bugging, or that was way harsh. None of these phrases had been used in my school prior to the release of that film, but simply viewing the movie, in the presence of others or alone, influenced the behavior and speech of the girls in my entire high school. Even those that had not seen the movie were subsequently influenced by this newly adopted language being used in their presence. And so we see social psychology at work. Another aspect of social psychology is that the behaviors do not even have to occur in order to have an influence on others. It is more than possible for implied or imagined thoughts, feelings, and behavior to impact an individual's behavior. Another Hollywood example is that of character Dexter Morgan from the Showtime TV series Dexter, and even more so the books written by Jeff Lindsay, such as Darkly Dreaming Dexter, which were the inspiration for the series. Chapter 3, Cooperation versus Competition. A number of years ago, in the spring, when the weather started to warm up and we could all stand to be outside longer than 2 minutes, I enrolled my son David on a soccer team for toddlers. It was one of the earliest age groups the children could begin playing, and I thought he'd enjoy running around outside and making new friends. The first evening I took him to soccer practice was an unmitigated disaster. The class was huge and meant to be divided into what would become two soccer teams of 3- and 4-year-old kids. Herding toddlers is somewhat akin to herding cats. It's impossible. And this is where I got a good look into the value of learning the skills of cooperation and competition. The kids were a hilarious mess of those who were faster and more agile, and those who seemed like they'd never seen a ball before. The faster and more agile children were able to monopolize the soccer ball, kicking it far into the distance, and then running after it to keep up their momentum as they headed toward makeshift goals. The kids who were slower and more clumsy, David, would gently nudge the ball with their feet, only to have one of the more agile children swoop in and kick it away from them. As the clumsy children chased after their ball in a haze of wails and tears, many of them would fall or even faceplant into the grass. Don't worry, no one was injured in the making of these future soccer champions. But that's why they call it soccer practice, right? Faithfully, I took David to practice twice each week, and gradually over the season he got better. He learned how to kick the ball to another person and receive a kicked ball in turn, and by the end of the season, he was moderately fast and moderately agile. The season culminated in a game between the two toddler soccer teams for 4. Racism and Health. On Monday, December 21st, 2015, Barbara Dawson, 57, was arrested at Liberty County Hospital in Blountstown, Florida. She was arrested for disorderly conduct and trespassing because she refused to leave the hospital. She was still in pain, she had said, and she was having trouble breathing. The officer who arrested her escorted her to his car, where she promptly collapsed and was unresponsive. Barbara Dawson was readmitted to the hospital, where she died from a blood clot in her lung an hour later. A woman named Toshana Ward, 25, died on January 2, 2020, when she was told she would have to wait 2 to 6 hours to see a doctor. She died after leaving the hospital and collapsing. She left to find help faster, as she'd already waited over 3 hours. A chest X-ray revealed she had cardiomegaly, an enlarged heart, which had been the result of a stillborn pregnancy she'd had in March. Both of these stories, and many, many more, are a result of what is called implicit bias in healthcare. Implicit bias theory was developed in the 1970s by Samuel Gartner, Ph.D., from the University of Delaware, and John F. Dovidio, Ph.D., from Yale University, both professors of psychology. Implicit bias theory states that people may hold negative, unconscious feelings and beliefs about others based on their race or ethnicity that's different from their conscious attitudes. So, whether intentional or not, Healthcare providers have the ability to let their subconscious thoughts and feelings override their personal aims and even professional ethics to treat everyone equally and without bias. We all do, but in healthcare. Chapter 5, In-Group versus Out-Group. Social Identity Theory. Henri Tajfel was a Polish Jew who moved to France to study chemistry at the Sorbonne because he wasn't permitted into university under the Nazi regime. When World War II broke out, he fought on the side of the French, but was captured as a German POW. He was uncertain if he should disclose his status as a Jew. Though he readily admitted he was a French citizen, he never denied being Jewish. After the war, Henri returned home to discover the vast majority of his friends and family had perished in the Holocaust, and, like many survivors, this had a profound effect on him. His experiences as he'd watched Hitler come to power, and then what happened to other Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, and the disabled, were what eventually led him to his study in psychology and intergroup relations. Under Tajfel's theory, he suggested that the groups we belong to, such as our family, religious organizations, and work groups, are all an important source of our pride and self-esteem. Being a member of these groups gives us a sense of identity and belonging, and that is extremely powerful. In our minds, we compartmentalize ourselves into groups of us and them, and one of the ways we do this is through our membership in these social groups. Tajfel's theory states that in order to facilitate putting ourselves into these groups, we tend to exaggerate the similarities within the group in order to create what is called the in-group. Members of the group also look to exaggerate the differences of individuals who are not in the group, and these people are called the out-group. The main hypothesis of Tajfel's theory is that members of the in-group work to find negative aspects of members of the out-group in order to enhance their self-image. Chapter 6, Social Influence. What is social influence? In the episode Raisins from the television show South Park, Stan decides to leave his regular group of friends and join up with the goth kids. In addition to each of the kids having their own list of woes, they are desperate not to become a conformist. However, in the hilarity of the episode, they've managed to miss that. As much as they have tried not to, they are in fact conforming to a particular aesthetic, the goth aesthetic. When Stan asks how he joins the group of goth kids, he's told all he has to do is dress like them and listen to the same music they do. The requirements of conformity by the nonconformists flying right over everyone's heads. While South Park is just a crude cartoon for adults, it often uses satire to point out particular points of view on many things happening in society today. It's a cartoon that both uses and has social influence. Social influence describes how our thoughts and feelings and behavior respond to the social world. This includes our tendencies to obey authority figures. This is why we don't argue with the police officer when we get pulled over for speeding when we know we were not. To conform to others and to follow the rules of society. Social influence comes in two forms: implicit expectations and explicit expectations. Implicit expectations are the unwritten rules of society or your social group, the norms you live by. These would be things like not picking your nose, not going to work without wearing makeup for women in certain areas of the country, and not fighting with your spouse in public. These are actions and behaviors that would not be considered acceptable and would be frowned upon by others. Implicit expectation can... Closing. This book has helped you look at how our brains process and interpret social interaction, but also how we're influenced by social interactions as well. As individuals, we all like to think we are stout in our beliefs, and that no matter what, we would never be swayed from those core beliefs that define who we are as a person. However, social psychology tells us it's possible, and more than that, it's happened before in the modern era. Sometimes people have done things for survival, but neuroscience tells us humans are easily swayed by conformity and the need to fit in to avoid the consequences of societal punishment. Can you think of anything you do on a daily basis to avoid shunning or social ostracism? I can. I use deodorant every day because no one wants to smell stinky armpits. I shave every day and dress in a suit as it's considered professional where I work. I don't walk into a store with no shoes on because, as they say, no shirt, no shoes, no service. I don't pass gas as I walk down the hallway so everyone else knows it was Taco Tuesday yesterday. I don't scream profanity at service workers because they are service workers and I'm unhappy with the service provided. Although YouTube seems to show people doing this more and more frequently, I will never, ever do this. I used to be a service worker. From the top of my head, there are five things I do in order to fit in so that I don't stand out and receive negative feedback from my peers or society at large. Here are five negative responses one might receive in response to the actions above. No one will tolerate your presence because you stink. You get a negative performance review because you don't... This has been 10-Minute Social Psychology, the critical thinker's guide to social behavior, motivation, and influence to make rational and effective decisions. Written by Albert Rutherford. Narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2020 by Albert Rutherford. Production copyright by Albert Rutherford. 10-Minute Social Psychology, the critical thinker's guide to social behavior, motivation, and influence to make rational and effective decisions. Written by Albert Rutherford. Narrated by Russell Newton. More information regarding today's book and the author can be found at audible.com or amazon.com. Show notes and further information can be found at russellericnewton.com. With an eclectic collection of insights, knowledge, and trivia from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Over Work podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.